Hey there, Tech Intersect listeners. Have you ever encountered naysayers claiming crypto is too volatile, a total scam, or a hacker's paradise? Well, it's time to dispel these persistent myths and reveal the truth. It's exactly why I wrote Digital Money Demystified, available now wherever books are sold. And this book is your golden ticket from being crypto curious to radiating crypto confidence. Navigate the crypto world with clarity and conquer the chaos. Get your copy today to learn about my journey, separate fact from fiction, and maybe even embark on a transformative journey yourself. Don't stop there. Enhance your learning experience exponentially. Join the DMD Insiders Membership Club. It's a gateway to premier coaching, engaging community, and unparalleled content that complements the insights in the book. Together, we'll unlock the potential of digital money and stride confidently into the future. Visit digitalmoneydemystified.com, grab your guide to the crypto universe, and become an esteemed member of our Insiders Club. Let's decode the digital dollar and invest in your crypto-savvy future right now.
If you're still trying to grapple with what is an ETF, think of the SPY, which is a S&P 500 ETF, or the QQQ, which is the NASDAQ ETF. So these are just bundles of typically companies that they put together so you can buy a share, if you will, but have rights in lots of different companies. What we have now here in the United States is the ability to buy Bitcoin in the financial wrapper of an ETF. And so you can do that if you have a brokerage house that will allow it in the same type of brokerage account that you have now.
Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner. And I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now. And it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. Hey everybody, welcome to Tech Intersect, where we navigate the crossroads of technology, business, and law in the new digital economy. And today I'm thrilled to have a friend of the show and also my dear friend and legal eagle, Joanne Holmes, come back to the show. She is a leading Web3 law and strategy specialist, an intellectual property specialist as well. And she's back on Tech Intersect today. Usually we're talking about NFTs or DAOs, the metaverse, oh my. And now we have a part of the conversation that deals with investments around exchange-traded funds. I thought this was an important conversation to have because recently, and we'll get into it when we get into the meat of our conversation, recently the SEC, begrudgingly, not my words, not Joe's words, eventually, apparently, finally, approved the first 10 spot Bitcoin ETFs. I want to unpack that, start to define some terms, and make this a more accessible conversation beyond Wall Street and the technoverse. And I could think of no better person to have this conversation with than Joe. So we will talk about all of that and more in a moment. But first, Joe Holmes, welcome.
Thank you, my friend. It is an honor and a privilege to be with you, as it is every time.
Awesome. Let's kind of set the stage here. Bitcoin, folks, as hopefully many of you know by now, is a type of digital asset that can be used both as a currency, but also a store of value. It's actually taxed as a capital asset. So it has these unique characteristics above and beyond currency. And I think sometimes people get thrown off by the misnomer a bit of cryptocurrency, given that it's programmable and has so many other attributes. And we'll also be talking about exchange traded funds, or ETFs, which is a type of investment fund that tracks the price of an underlying asset or an index, for example. And these ETFs are traded on the stock exchange. combining these two, which is what has recently happened, this Bitcoin exchange traded fund now allows investors to have exposure to Bitcoin because the ETF closely tracks the price of Bitcoin without the complexities of self-custody and owning directly. That's the kind of the best way that I can summarize this. Joe, before we kind of delve into Bitcoin ETF, maybe just to get your thoughts on where we are now. We will take a step back, but let's start where we are now and take a moment to just understand and appreciate what has just happened with the approval of the first Bitcoin ETFs.
Well, thank you. That was a great overview of what's new in regard to the opportunity for ETFs. And I think we should be mindful, because Web3 and digital assets are global first, to say that it's new here in the United States. In many other countries around the world, the opportunity to be able to buy and sell ETFs for spot Bitcoin have existed for some time. Our regulators here in the United States have had a little bit of trepidation, although futures-based Bitcoin exchange-traded funds were available before. So this is a move forward that has been, if I'm remembering correctly, about 10 years in the making, of multiple applications being filed with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission requesting the spot Bitcoin ETF. While the audience is very familiar with your disclaimers, none of this is legal or financial advice. But what this creates for those in the United States is a new unique opportunity to be able to participate in the valuation of Bitcoin and have that more closely tied to the actual live trading value. So one of the points of distinction and one of the things that I think people will need to consider is, if you want to have, and we're going to stick to Bitcoin because of course there are over 10,000 cryptocurrencies and other types of digital assets that one could hold in a portfolio, a wealth portfolio, specifically with respect to Bitcoin, this transition to having the opportunity for spot versus futures allows not only for the trading more closely aligned to the current price of Bitcoin, but there's been a fee war. And so BlackRock and ARK and Bitwise and so many others have actually been in a race to be more competitive and offer the opportunity to those ETF customers to have a very low fee cost structure for owning these assets. So one of the things, in addition to, do I want the security of holding my Bitcoin within cold storage in a wallet that you individually control, is what are the costs that you're going to incur from buying that asset on an exchange, for example, and how does that compare to the cost of having that asset in an ETF format? So there are a number of different questions around, what is your ideology related to Bitcoin? What is your financial strategy? And even then, in what type of account? So do you want to hold it in a, for example, taxable brokerage account? Or do your non-taxable accounts like IRAs, 401ks, or otherwise have the capacity to be able to hold Bitcoin? So you would definitely want to think about some of the tax issues as well. But we're frankly catching up with so many other parts of the world and making Bitcoin ownership accessible in a different way.
I'm so glad that you started out that way, because we can be so in the weeds here on our own little island in the United States, and this is not operating in a vacuum. In fact, I remember a comment perhaps a week or so ago on my LinkedIn feed that I was talking about ETFs, and like, why are we talking about it in the context of America? We should be talking about it more globally. Isn't this a global economy and a global currency? And I had to say bullseye, spot on. When I think about Canada and other countries that seem to move forward without issue, and what seems to be kind of the dragging of the proverbial feet here in the United States. In fact, you know, last year in March, I testified before the House Financial Services Committee talking about some of my concerns about our government's approach to kind of regulation by enforcement, and the concerns with not only the uncertainty and lack of clarity, particularly for institutional investors, but the fact that this technology waits for no agency, right? And this continues to march on for sure. You started to mention and kind of the list of exchange traded funds. I will say, in the spirit of full disclosure, that I am on the board of Digital Currency Group, which owns Grayscale, the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, or GBTC, known for its dominant position in cryptocurrency investments, has a spot ETF and basically converted the trust shares into the ETF shares as well, has a fee structure. But there are 11 different companies here involved now. And so, wonder your thoughts about maybe even just competition as well, kind of at a high level, because as you said, this is not legal or financial advice. It was interesting for me to look through the list. I have the list here as well, and the range of fees. I didn't fully anticipate that there would be such a range of the fees and opportunities. I don't even know how people kind of make sense of it. Maybe they focus on the brand and reputational value of the fund manager. Maybe if they're in the hunt for fees, I can't really tell. Any thoughts on that?
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
So I think an important opportunity that has unlocked is the ability for RIAs or registered investment advisors to be able to both offer and frankly be able to take a commission structure from advising their clients around bringing these products into a portfolio. So The reality is that you and I are speaking in a way and in a language in a community to which we're very accustomed. Many of those in the larger financial services or the traditional Wall Street perspective are still getting up to speed that these ETFs are even available. And quite frankly, they might be frightened at what's happened to the price of Bitcoin since the ETFs were made available earlier this month. So when we're talking about what kinds of considerations there might be or the competition, here in the United States, we're generally fans of competition when it serves a consumer and creates an efficient market for financial products. And so as I think about that, certainly some who are either directly themselves following this or who are speaking to their advisors are going to consider. I mean, one of the things that's attractive about an ETF versus a mutual fund is that ETFs traditionally have a lower cost structure. They can be traded when markets are open at whatever the given price is. You can set a limit order, whereas mutual funds are more of a sort of stagnant type one price a day offering. So if you are sensitive to fees and the ability to trade in or out of a product or buy it at a particular price, then the ETF is going to be more attractive. One step beyond that, again, is looking at what are the fee structures. So some have established a fee structure that is not going to change. Others have said for the first $1 or $5 billion, we're going to have a lower fee structure and then we're going to move to our longer term fee structure. Many of them are offering their products, at least initially, at a zero fee rate. And so that is certainly something that some are going to consider. Then others, you know, we're trademark lawyers. Others are just going to look at the brand and they're going to say, you know what? I already own some of BlackRock's iShares. I already, you know, own some of Cathie Wood's ARK ETFs. I know Bitwise is in the Web3 community and that, you know, I trust them for this. Others are going to say, you know what? I've had Fidelity my entire life. I know and trust Fidelity. Others are going to look at GBTC and say, this has been around for longer. And so right. It feels more established. Within the financial community, I've also heard conversation about keeping tight bid-ask spreads. And so, and then also the reality of being able to do some of the behind the scenes things that make for efficient settlement. Chair Gensler and the SEC made a decision that these are going to settle not in kind. And so there's an exchange of money versus actual right. Bitcoin that's happening on the back end. So there are a number of different issues that are going into the fine points of distinction that are being made by the different ETF offers. But if we were speaking to someone who does not focus their time in this space, I would say, look at the fee structures, talk to your financial advisor, and probably lean a little bit more into how does this fit into your larger asset and portfolio allocation, as opposed to getting into the weeds, because most of the products are going to have competitive pricing.
Yeah, that's really important. And I'm glad that you also mentioned, how do I say, I guess the cash-based model for the creation and the redemption of shares, right? That's why we, you know, I started with the caveat that this is not Satoshi's wildest dream of, but I think that there are so many people for a number of reasons, either when you talk about kind of like what their risk assessment or tolerance might be, their desire and a de-risk capacity to have some exposure to this emerging asset class while they're still trying to figure it out. They don't want to miss out. So there's certainly some FOMO around it, but also an appreciation that Bitcoin's been around since January 3rd, 2009, but who's counting, and is still here. You have this historical data that is better than many other things. And some of the other interesting points when I think about exchange traded funds for commodities like gold or silver, and at least initially, let's see how it shakes out in the next 3 to 6 months and year. It's kind of frothy right now, but the idea that the Bitcoin ETF is outperforming early indicators from silver, for example, it's second only to gold. And so this is the area where money managers, financial advisors, CPAs, lawyers, we don't have the luxury of playing the head in the sand game and going off of, you know, headlines and FUD, which stands for fear, uncertainty, and doubt in our little bubble. And that's not just regular fear, regular uncertainty, and regular doubt, but oftentimes injected into the ecosystem to scare enough people away. We just don't have that option now. Clients, students, assigning partners, right? They all have questions about this, and you have to stay ahead of the curve in terms of your education as you start to prepare to pivot and really kind of future-proof your practice. Can you talk, before I ask my next question about ETFs, just your thoughts about how you started to pivot in practice? We both have done extraordinary work to take our existing expertise, but to remain relevant and then ahead of the curve when we think about moving into this new space. Can you give some pointers for, you know, the lawyers out there in the world and other professionals who are like, I don't know what this is, but evidently now I have to pay attention?
I appreciate you offering me the chance to speak to that, because we're still early. That's the actual reality of things, that we're still early. This is still emerging technology, even though we're 15 years in. One of the things that's exciting to me about that is that those who are willing to learn the terminology, who, and by the way, you can do it for free. This is obviously right. A great podcast where you can learn the fundamentals and the applications of blockchain technology. There are lots of great reputable YouTube channels where you can get quality information. And so it's not necessary to formally go back to school, although Professor Evans teaches a great class and offers outstanding educational material. Right. You don't have to go to law school. You can take your experience in marketing or experience design or coding or tax or finance, and you can learn the language and value of this technology and bring your talents to it. Because we are still early, no one, or very few people, are so credentialed that they're just light years ahead of everyone else. Right. And so it is really a unique opportunity where we have something like an equal playing field. And that hasn't happened very often in my career, where it doesn't really matter where you're from. It matters what you know. And you can show up and provide value in these communities. Typically, the conversations are happening on crypto Twitter. You know, that's what Twitter is, what its mama named it. And so I'm going to call it Twitter and not X.
It's very much same.
But you can show up there or in Discord or Telegram or on LinkedIn and bring your insights to this space. So I would really encourage people to please not feel intimidated. If you find someone who's sharing something of value in the spaces where you're watching in social media, reach out to them and say, hey, I admire what you shared or what you posted. I do this thing and I'd like to find a way. I've found that these communities are really hungry for people who know what they're talking about and are willing to lend a voice.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Have you ever found yourself puzzled, wondering if cryptocurrency is just a fleeting trend, a scam, or perhaps the future? Hi, I'm Dr. Tanya Evans, and I'm here to introduce you to my new book, Digital Money Demystified, Your Ultimate Guide to Deciphering the Crypto Maze. As a legal policy and crypto education expert, I've crafted this book to cut through the chaos, debunk the myths, and tackle the FUD, that's fear, uncertainty, and doubt. From captivating headlines to meticulously sourced data, I guide you through the promises and the pitfalls of digital assets. With 12 chapters and 10 myths dispelled, Digital Money Demystified is designed for investors, business owners, and professionals eager to navigate the digital economy. It's more than just a book. It's a tool for economic empowerment that directs you safely and confidently from cash to crypto. Say goodbye to bewilderment and hello to enlightenment. Transform from crypto curious to confident. Sidestep those scammers and embrace the future of work, wealth, and creativity. Grab your copy of Digital Money Demystified today at the book's companion website, digitalmoneydemystified.com, or wherever books are sold. This is the right book, the right voice at the right time. Don't miss out on the digital revolution. Stop by digitalmoneydemystified.com now.
I 100% agree, and I've had an extremely positive experience in that regard, and I know that you have too. And it's really been a joy because we are literally building the plane while we're flying it. So the idea of, I just feel a sense of renewed energy. I know it takes all of my time, all day, every day, and twice on Sunday, but it's very, very exciting, and a little goes a long way with this experience. We're not at all suggesting just go out there and wing it, because you will be flagged as a fraud sooner than you can say Satoshi, I assure you. But if you come in with respect, intellectual curiosity, and being open to learn, you have the ability, and you have so many more resources than Joe and I did as we started, which were even better than those who started before us, that you are in a time where you can leverage, you know, the worldwide internet of information and use that knowledge to kind of be the smartest kid in class now that we're talking about the internet of value. No longer just exchanging messages and creation, although that's critically important, but now consider that messaging, those packets of information, now contain extraordinary value that can unlock markets, that can tap new resources as a matter of liquidity. And also, and Joe and I talk about this a lot, when it comes to market participation and inclusion, that it doesn't matter where you are, who you are, what skin color you are, either your wallet has what it has or it doesn't. And in the same respect, you can avail yourselves of some of these other assets. The impediment at this point, Joe, I'm interested in your thoughts on this, is just education about how to even access, you know, an exchange traded fund. What we've come to understand is that this is as quote unquote easy. I'm not using that in terms of easy, but easier now if you have an online brokerage account. You mentioned earlier is going to be some type of brokerage account or some tax-free setup for retirement, et cetera. There's so many different options. But so now this major impediment becomes a level of education and resources and access so that you're talking to the right financial advisor to make the right decisions. So thoughts about inclusion.
I'm going to be frank with you. A big part of my reason for, frankly, risking my career reputation in a space where there's quite a bit of hostility is because right. inclusion matters to me so much. We've both been in technology and emerging technology for quite some time now. And what I have personally seen is that technology is going to impact all of us, but not all of us are at the table when it's being designed or when it's being implemented. And not all of us have information about that access piece. So if we talk about where we've come from to where we're going, one of the reasons why people have not held digital assets or specifically cryptocurrencies to date is because they might not have even understood what the on-ramps looked like. Even if you right. go through an exchange like a Coinbase or a Kraken, you might have been hearing that, oh, the Securities and Exchange Commission has sued them. By the way, I'm on a particular side that I'm rooting for in those lawsuits.
Well done. Well
and it
done.
Ain't the SEC.
I know that's right.
But you might think, well, wait, I have a relationship with Fidelity or Schwab. I don't know anything about Coinbase. And so you might not have had a familiarity with, can I trust this organization to even go set up an account with them? Even if I set up an account with them, do I need to be nervous that someone's going to hack it or that something untoward is going to happen? I'm going to lose access to those assets. So there is a group for whom going through that process and either, this might sound blasphemous to some in the community, holding your crypto on an exchange, if you're nervous about taking the extra step and putting those cryptocurrency into cold wallets, which simply means having a hardware device that you exchange mm-hmm. software and you've got some information that you need to store so that you can access those digital assets or cryptocurrencies. So that's what we're talking mm-hmm. about. If you want to go the traditional route, you can have on exchange with a place like Coinbase or Kraken, or you can take those assets and hold them yourself on a physical wallet like a Ledger, for example. That's the OG version of this.
Right.
What has become available to Americans as of January 2024 is that you can, if you have a relationship, and again, you would want to check into this because, for example, Vanguard has taken a position that they are not now, and as they say, not ever, in their current
we'll
perspective.
See.
Yeah, right. In their current perspective, they're not going to offer any of these ETFs because they have a philosophical difference. That is, frankly, a somewhat paternalistic perspective to take around what assets someone should or should not be able to invest in. So first, you would want to look at, what are my on-ramps? Do I have a brokerage account at a Schwab, a Fidelity, or some other organization where you can already buy stocks, mutual funds, and other types of ETFs? By the way, if you're still trying to grapple with what is an ETF, think of the SPY, which is a S&P 500 ETF, or the QQQ, which is the NASDAQ ETF. So these are just bundles of typically companies that they put together so you can buy a share, if you will, but have rights in lots of different companies. What we have now here in the United States is the ability to buy Bitcoin in the financial wrapper of an ETF. And so you can do that if you have a brokerage house that will allow it in the same type of brokerage account that you have now. However, one thing you would probably want to think about is the tax treatment. So if you buy that asset, when you go to sell it, you're going to have a tax implication. By the way, you're going to have a tax implication whether you buy it in an ETF wrapper or you buy it and then sell it as just the Bitcoin itself. There's going to be a tax implication in the United States. But if you're trying to think about, I want to be an investor who does not need to square up with the IRS every year, then you might want to look at holding Bitcoin as an ETF in your IRA, in your 401k. I think that would be available both in traditional and Roth styles. And so you will want to look at whether that is attractive to you in evaluating your larger asset allocation for the purpose of not having to reconcile that with the IRS and your state Department of Revenue every year. So it just makes it a different avenue. Some people are never going to go down the holding cryptocurrencies directly, and they want it to neatly fit into a platform where they can see it with all of their other investments.
I think those are excellent points. And really starts to set the stage for the fact that you have options. I think, you know, at the end of the day, yes, we're talking about cryptocurrencies and we're talking about investments and all sorts of other things, but underneath it all, or perhaps the end game, at least for me, and I offer it for listeners as well, is this idea of freedom. Freedom comes with options. Freedom comes with information. Fear is not an investment strategy. Either the fear of getting in, which I'm now calling FOGI, because I don't know how to properly pronounce F-O-G-I, so it's FOGI, and FOMO, which we're all familiar, fear of missing out. Both, you know, I love the word, you know, contained in a wrapper of fear. That is not an investment strategy. The fear of missing out versus the fear of getting in. And so pushing past that, you know, we fear what we don't understand, quite frankly. And so the idea of even talking through this, in fact, let's go through the some kind of bullet points and or takeaways from just understanding ETFs at the basic level. Joe, you've done an extraordinary job to just, you know, a lot of times people need by analogy or things that with which they're already familiar. And then just a final point about kind of the lead up to the launch of the ETF, and then we'll get out of here. So we have an ETF is a type of investment fund traded on a stock exchange, much in the same way as stocks, or, and you mentioned mutual funds as well, tracks an index or a commodity, could track bonds, a basket of assets, right? So, and I'm so glad that you distinguished between mutual funds as a matter of pricing and ETFs, but unlike mutual funds, an ETF trades throughout the day. The prices may be more or less than the net asset value. And that's a critically important point rather than something that remains stable throughout the day. Maybe the one drawback is that, you know, the lights go off on the trading desk and exchanges, but Bitcoin continues to chug along. And people have experienced that with the kind of the frothiness of the market, the kind of the pullback, which scares people when you think, you know, that robust 45, 46, 47, and then the pullback. I call that a dip and an opportunity, but that is not legal or financial advice. But also, volatility isn't bad. And when I started to look and compare the beginnings of other exchange traded funds, they were not stable initially. It finds its way. You have inflows and outflows and adjustments. You have this completely other character that is grayscale that has to convert from a trust. Like, there's a lot going on, but that doesn't undermine the fact that SEC approved investment vehicle that gives you exposure to Bitcoin when you don't hold it yourself, or it could be a both and, is fantastic for the United States. And we start to catch up to your original point with kind of ROW, the rest of the world. If we continue to think about it in that way, now you will know the language and the questions to even ask an advisor, or ways that you, if you don't have an advisor and you don't necessarily have to, because now we have all sorts of platforms, I won't name them, but you can go on and there's a bunch of information. So if you're at a ARK or Fidelity, BlackRock, Grayscale, et cetera, there will be no shortage of information to get people up to speed on how to participate. Here's a little funny part. I don't think it was so funny to the SEC, bless their hearts. But you know how you and I, we always talk about being safer, about, you know, making sure that you have two-factor authentication, you have a VPN, that you have to be careful out there in those internet streets. So we had this little thing of the Twitter account of the SEC being compromised. Evidently, we're not calling it a hack because they were SIM swapped and something, something, and a partridge in a pear tree. And so an announcement that we all anticipated came out on a day that it wasn't supposed to, because someone got a hold or SIM swapped that device and actually started tweeting out some things. Your thoughts on that, counselor?
Oh, boy. I feel the spirit of my grandmother telling me to hush right now. But
you're like, uh-oh, is this thing on? Is this thing on?
You know, I think the most prudent response to that would be to reinforce what you do all the time, what we do all the time, is just to understand that, first of all, for your own personal safety, you need to understand, check and double check that you have appropriate security measures in place. And then also to be careful with information in this space that is coming from an authentic source and maybe pause for a moment and double check from another trusted source. So one of the things that when people ask me questions about this space that I also say is, I will share with you trusted resources, right? You should not take my word alone for anything. Anything that I share with you should be backed up with other trusted resources. And certainly when information is being communicated through social media, that is all the more the case. I think people had good reason to have some pause and expect that they could trust the account, the social media account of the Securities and Exchange Commission. But I think it's worth a double check. And I would also say, as you're thinking through this, and maybe if you have some pause seeing what's happened quite recently in the markets, step back and take a longer term view. If you're going to be an investor, it's important to know that markets, not just commodities markets, not just markets related to emerging technology, markets at large are going to have ebbs and flows. Any investor should be aware of the reasons why they're making an investment of their hard-earned money. And so when you look at blockchain and the myriad of digital assets that are blockchain-based, and more specifically Bitcoin, I would ask you to take a step back and look and see where there have been some consistencies over a longer view that might create an opportunity when markets step back for a moment. And then see for yourself, make that longer term judgment. I have found that many financial advisors are suggesting a 1% to 5% allocation, not a bet your home or your future well-being, but an opportunity to see, is this something that makes sense within my portfolio? And is there a way for me, not only just from a portfolio perspective, but from a professional perspective, to leverage my talents?
Absolutely. Diversification within an asset class and across your asset portfolio. And that requires your time and your attention. And so the whole head in the sand, even about investments, and I certainly used to do it, I have learned more about money, my own risk tolerance, my investment thesis, what an investment thesis is. I didn't learn that for all of my highfalutin education, although I love you, Northwestern. Thank you very much. And you too, Howard Law. And my parents. You're amazing. I've learned more in the last 7 years than I have in my entire life. And that also is a sense of freedom and empowerment when, you know, I think of at every job, you know, at the end, and they're just handing you something about your benefits package. And people are like, I don't even know, just pick for me. Let's even pause there and be more reflective, because the only way that we're going to have options is that we really lean in, educate ourselves. And then, of course, Joe and I are experts and professionals in a particular area. We do not want you to be your own lawyer. But that doesn't mean you wouldn't learn the questions and the things that you want, so that we would serve you, not the other way around. And so keep that in mind when you are thinking about finances as well. And in all seriousness, about two-factor authentication, VPNs, if you don't know any of these terms, definitely look them up and check your sources. The quality of your source and the quantity of sources, as Joe has said, we do this all the time as lawyers and academics in my case as well. And we offer that to you. You can do this, I promise you. And it starts with the first step of, obviously, thank you for listening to this episode. We will drop some resources and some links so that you will have a variety and diversity of resources and sources to begin your journey or to continue your journey, either as an investor or a professional, particularly those professionals where investors, governments, businesses will be turning to you and relying on you for advice. So now we think of ethical obligations. I just talked about this with my class, that part of competence to practice law, for example, requires technological competence, not just to turn on Zoom and make sure that you're not on mute, but also what are the technological and innovative advancements that are impacting your clients, your business, and your future. And so we hope that this episode serves you well in that capacity, to be sure. And Joe, I leave you with final comments of any takeaways or information that you want to leave with folks, including how to get more information about you and your work.
Well, thank you for that. My final takeaway would be reiterating, you belong here. whatever your talents are, this is a global technology that will impact us all. And we need a broad diversity of inclusive voices speaking up and joining into this conversation. So I applaud anyone who makes that effort to join in and understand better through great resources like Tech Intersect and Digital Money Demystified and others. In terms of reaching out to me, I am Joanne, J-O-A-N-N, Holmes, H-O-L-M-E-S, on LinkedIn. My website is holmesatlaw.com. And I am that geek. I am that nerd who really loves blockchain technology, loves monetizing IP and working with business professionals in this space to advance it and show its value. So again, thank you for the opportunity to be with you and serve your audience, Tanya. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening to the Tech Intersect podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you love it, please tell the world. If not, go ahead and tell me. And in either case, drop a comment or ping me on social media at IPProfEvans with the hashtag Tech Intersect. And finally, a quick reminder on digital safety. There are a lot of scammers out there impersonating me and others, and I need your help. Now hear this, and remember, I will never slide into your DMs to say peace and blessings or hey, and I will never reach out to solicit your time or your money on social media, like ever. I'm not a trader. I am an educator and an attorney licensed in 4 states. Thank you very much. I'm here to inform, inspire, and empower. No cap, and definitely no Forex. So be careful, make good choices, and remember, I developed an entire free masterclass about the topic of digital safety in the crypto space. So check out secureyourcryptobag.com for more information. That's secureyourcryptobag.com. All right, that's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.